it laid right here. When old death come get poor me. I've been walking. Thank you.
me. You don't know what it means to be left alone. right, you just heard from Eddie Taylor and his blues band with the title track to the Evidence disc. Came out in 1994, called My Heart is Bleeding. Indeed, Eddie Taylor here on the Deep Blues Hour. Plus, we heard from Tail Dragger. Nice tune from Delmark Records called Sitting Here Singing My Blues. That was from a live set up in Chicago at Vern's Friendly Lounge. A disc called My Head is Bald from Tail Dragger. All right, let's see. Coming up next, we got music from Sun Seals. There he is from his Alligator record called Midnight Sun. Song's entitled, I Believe You're Trying to Make a Fool Out of Me. All right, Sun Seals here on the Deep Blues Hour on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Trying to make a fool of me.
she meant goodbye. I should have known by the tear in her eyes. But you know, you're the same. What you want it to be when you blinded by love, love sure blinded me. I held her hand, she held my heart. When that love falls apart, cause you only see what you want it to be when you blinded by love. Love sure blinded me. You hope against hope. Yes, you try to drink, try to drink. Worst, the worst thing about it, she never even told you why, but she'll live right on. But I'll die every day. Hoping she'll change, though I know there's no way. Oh yes, Lord, but you only see what you want it to be. When you blinded by love, and love sure blinded me. Against hope, yes you do. You try to drink the bar.
worst, most terrible thing about her. She never, never even told you why. She'll live right on. But I'll die every day. When she'll change, though I know there's no way.
Well, there you have, and still have, a little music from Jimmy Reed, titled Shame, Shame, Shame. That's from the LP called Upside Your Head, before Jimmy Reed. We heard from another Jimmy. That was Jimmy Witherspoon, from his LP called Midnight Lady Called the Blues. That was Blinded by Love. You know, the food stamp program can help you buy the food you need. Many folks who are eligible don't know it. You don't need to be on welfare. You could be working part or full-time. And now the amount of money you can make and still qualify has gone up. To apply for food stamps or to see if you qualify, call Just Harvest at 412-431-8963. And every year, college and university students experience a growing number of fire-related emergencies. There are several causes for these fire-related emergencies. However, most are due to a general lack of knowledge regarding the fire safety and fire prevention. This message is brought to you by the Environmental Health and Safety Department. For more information regarding fire safety and prevention, visit our website at cmu.edu/EHS. Oh, I do also want to remind you of a couple of the programs you can check out here on this fine radio station. This is the title track, Juke Boy Bonner, here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Smiling like I'm happy, but you don't know how I feel. I'm smiling like I'm happy, but you don't know how I feel. I feel like life is a cheater, and it gave me a dirty deal. Now I'm gonna tell everybody just like it is. I drink to keep from worrying, and I smile and hold back my tears, and I'm smiling like I'm happy. But you don't know how I feel. I feel like life is a cheater, and it gave me a dirty deal. Tell everybody, please understand, my baby don't love me no more. She got some other man. I'm just smiling like I'm happy, but you don't know how I feel. I feel like life is a cheater, and it gave me a dirty deal.
This old dark road can't get her back again. Woo-hoo! I don't expect no help. It's goodbye to my friends. night road. No moon or stars in sight. Black night road. No moon or stars in sight. I'd give anything see some friendly light. My baby's dead. She found another man. She's dead to me. She found another man. I'm out here on this road. I'm trying to do what I can. All right, Sonny. I just can't go on. My poor heart. My poor heart is full of fear.
WRCT. In sound from way out.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
You are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, and welcome to this week's edition of In Black America and Ebony Spectrum.
From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
Now, my idea of creating a modern media company and really redefining what the modern newspaper is, was something that I think he also understood, and I think we hit it off. And that we had similar goals and aspirations. And so, again, it was a challenge, too. You know, I mean, I went to the undefeated and people had really written it off for dead. And, you know, we built it and made it into something really, I think, that people could be proud of. And I thought that we got a big challenge here where we don't have as much penetration as we should have and we deserve to have. It's, you know, LA Times been through a lot of difficult days before, so we have an opportunity. We have to build the place and get audience and build subscriptions. So part of it was the challenge of doing it, and the quality was always there journalistically. No one needed to tell me about the high quality.
Kevin Meredith, executive editor of the Los Angeles Times. In June 2021, Meredith took the helm of the largest news gathering organization in the West. The veteran journalist became the 19th editor of the 139-year-old newspaper. Previously, he was a senior vice president at ESPN and editor-in-chief of The Undefeated, a multimedia platform that explored the intersections of race, sports, and culture. Before ESPN, he spent two decades at The Washington Post. Prior to The Post, he worked at the Dallas Morning News as a special projects reporter, local political writer, and national correspondent based in Washington, D.C. In 2020, he received the National Association of Black Journalists Chuck Stone Lifetime Achievement Award. Over the years, Meredith has proven he can flourish in the industry that has a small number of media executives that look like him. I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Kevin Meredith, executive editor of the Los Angeles Times, Part 2, In Black America.
I think in a newsroom, you want to create energy, you know, that where people feel it, and then, man, here somebody did something that was cool, what can we do? You know, a happy newsroom for me is where people are constantly pitching new things, right, and constantly thinking, how can I make the place better? Because when you have that, then that's people claiming the place as theirs, because it's just, mm-hmm, as much as I enjoy being executive editor, it's not my Los Angeles Times, you know, it's the Los Angeles Times, and so everybody can attach their name to it and their vibe to it.
The Los Angeles Times is the largest metropolitan daily newspaper in America, with a daily readership of 1.4 million and 2.5 million on Sunday, more than 22 million unique LATimes.com visitors monthly. The Pulitzer Prize-winning Times has been covering Southern California for more than 133 years. In June 2021, Kevin Meredith was selected to lead the Los Angeles Times into a new era. Before joining the Times, he was a senior vice president at ESPN and editor-in-chief of The Undefeated. Before joining ESPN, he spent 22 years at The Washington Post as a congressional correspondent, national political reporter, long-form feature writer, magazine columnist, and senior editor in several roles. Prior to The Post, he worked in the Lone Star State at the Dallas Morning News. He began his journalism career at the Milwaukee Journal. Mindful of the magnitude of his new position, he doesn't take it lightly. He's well aware that his success means others like him will be given an opportunity. On today's program, we conclude our conversation with Kevin Meredith.
The Dallas Morning News leadership, Ralph Langer and Bob Mong, and they wanted to diversify their management ranks. And so they had some shakeup of the masthead, and they asked me to come back to oversee foreign and national news coverage and to be an assistant managing editor. And so I ended up doing that for a couple of years before The Post called, you know, and it was not the first time, mm-hmm, that The Post had called. I thought maybe I had missed my window of coming to the Washington Post, to be honest. I thought, you know, I had turned them down at least a couple of different times. And I thought, man, I'm never going to, you know, they're going to say, forget him. But I had a really personal reason to get back to D.C. because I had a close relationship with my now wife, and we had a long distance relationship, and so we ended up, I ended up coming back, talking to the Post. By this time I had a pretty good relationship with the management there and was pretty well known. And so it just so happened I had a job covering Congress open, and I went back and talked to them. And I think I always felt that I had leadership ability. And the thing I say about leaders is that you can lead anywhere, right? You can lead from where you are. And even before I was in management, I was always part of bringing people together to talk to leaders, either individually to talk about how to diversify our newsrooms and improvements in them. And so I think it's possible to play a role. I love to write and report so much, so I was reluctant. And I would, every time I put my foot in, I had this itch to get out, and to go back into writing. So, I kept doing that, putting my foot in here. And then it came that, we had a new editor, Marcus Brockley from the Wall Street Journal, who took over right at the end of the 2008 campaign, and, which I was covering is kind of a roving feature writer. And I thinking like, man, after this, I'm going to try to carve out a space to really write about the first African-American president. But he asked me to be national editor. And this time I really looked at it really closely. A lot of people prevailed on me. Some of my mentors and others said, look, your place needs you. It's given you a lot. And I thought at that time I was the first African-American editor to be national editor, right. And so I did that, and that kind of set a path of, just continued being in management. I'm talking to you, as executive editor. It started really with that. It was the continuing, through 4 years of national editor and then almost 3 years of being managing editor. Marty Baron came in, and then, my decision to leave and go to ESPN to launch a startup called The Undefeated, now Anscape, and from there deciding to lead the Walt Disney Company after 5 years there as a senior vice president, editor in chief of The Undefeated, and join the LA Times. And that was largely through really, I would say the Soon Chong family, particularly Patrick and Michelle and his daughter Nika, and talking to them about what all they were trying to do with the Los Angeles Times, and my sense of their commitment to it and to the city. And here I am talking to you.
Talk to us about that day when you went to ESPN, because, I woke up, 2015, and you're leaving the Post, and I'm saying you're going to start this upstart, The Undefeated, that's going to blaze new trails with race and culture through sports. Talk to us about that.
It was really an agonizing decision for me because, I've been at the Washington Post for 22 years and done a lot of different things. And also being managing editor, I really love working with Marty Baron. Really great experience. We still remain close. And I just felt like I felt really connected to the newsroom there. And, sometimes when you're just at a place that feels home, it's hard to leave it. Particularly when you're, particularly when you're usually in the position I'm on the other side of that. I'm trying to get people to stay with us and not leave.
Right.
And so now people are trying to get me to not leave. But sometimes I think we were kind of in this era, and it was in the early stages of really digital transformation. That had been happening, certainly, and happening at the Washington Post, happening and elsewhere. But, I think slowly, methodically, but part of it happening was it was getting all of us to think differently about our careers and there was something about the chance to launch a startup. That was part of it that ESPN couldn't get off the ground. It was a new challenge. So it's a little bit like disrupting myself. We were in the age of disruption, and I thought I could just might as well maybe take a flyer and disrupt myself and try something different. It also was a reminder to me this was the modern version of when we started a black student newspaper on campus at Boston University in a white, predominantly white campus.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the modern version of it, you know, to start something from scratch, build it, see what we could do with it, and just the challenge of it. And so I didn't regret that at all. Like, it was because I learned so much, you know, learned a lot about linear television. I never worked in television, learned a lot, certainly just about how the ecosystem of media is all kind of intertwined and connected. And we did so many different things. You know, we really were, we used to say this, you know, our managing editor, Raina Kelly, took over for me to say we were going to be content agnostic. And we were. I mean, we did a couple of best-selling children's books, and we did town halls. We brought Barack Obama to the largest HBCU for a televised special. You know, we had a televised special on gun violence in Chicago, South Side of Chicago. We did things that really nobody had done before we got there at ESPN. You know, we really pioneered a lot there, and I think in the country. We did music videos, original music. And then we just started finally able to break through right after George Floyd killed, unfortunately. You know, we were pushing to grow across the Walt Disney Company. It was really that time, around that time, that allowed us to spotlight more broadly with the company. And we were able to do some of the things that we wanted to do, including a record label, a book imprint, and now an independent studio. And that's all happened. And so I feel proud that we expanded and it's clearly on your way of building kind of a global black brand within the Walt Disney Company. And so all of it is beyond just like individual success, is personal and personal satisfaction. It's just learning. And I think we're all trying to do that as journalists. Journalism gives us a great opportunity to learn constantly. And for me, the years I spent at ESPN and at the Walt Disney Company was really a great growth period for me professionally and just knowledge wise and you know, because I'm doing things, thinking about marketing, thinking about documentaries, you know, all kinds of other things that I had not done, really more connected with advertising and revenue and monetization. You know, you're getting the full spectrum of what it would be to be a media executive, and with a small team too, and a relatively small budget. It also taught you that you can do some tremendous work with relatively small group and a relatively small budget. And it's a lesson that, you know, try to carry back here.
It's been a year since your appointment. What was it about the Los Angeles Times that struck your interest, considering that it had its own problems itself?
Well, again, I was struck by, you know, it was a really active courtship on the part of Patrick and Michelle Soon-Chung. And I was drawn to some of the ideas that, and the vibrancy that their daughter Nika had, and their commitment to the place. You know, it's, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people have bought newspapers and destroyed them, right? And,
right.
you know, certainly, you know, there have been, I say all billionaires are not created equal. You know, there have been, but I think they really saw the potential of what the LA Times could become. You know, this predates me. It was bought by Patrick before I got there, and he invested in it. He's shown a commitment to it. And so I think, you know, my idea of creating a modern media company and really redefining what the modern newspaper was something that I think he also understood. And I think we hit it off, and that we had similar goals and aspirations. And so, again, it was the challenge too. You know, I mean, I've been, you know, I went to the Undefeated, and people had really written it off for dead. And, you know, we built it and made it into something really, I think, that people could be proud of. And I thought that we got a big challenge here where we don't have as much penetration as we should have and we deserve to have. It's, you know, LA Times has been through a lot of difficult days before. So we have an opportunity, and we have to build the place and get audience and build subscriptions. So part of it was the challenge of doing it. And the quality was always there journalistically. No one needed to tell me about the high quality. I was a consumer of the LA Times over the years, and even in the most difficult periods, they were producing some tremendous journalism. So knew a lot of the journalists and familiar with the reputations of others I didn't know. Yeah, I just said, let me try something. And obviously the chance to be in the West Coast with my kids, you know, our two oldest sons been out here in the film business, and the oldest son has a grandson. So the opportunity to bring our media family together was also appealing to me and my wife, and here we are.
What will be some of your top priorities, and how will you go about achieving those goals?
Well, I think one of the biggest priorities was just to, and this is unglamorous, is to structure us, to really have structure and practices that represent the era we're living in now, you know, and how people are consuming. So, you know, to be more active and vibrant on social media, we created a social team, you know, a social content creation team called the 404, you know, which is in its early stages. We created a fast break desk, you know, for trending, breaking news and trending topics, and put a structure so that we're trying to drive coverage every day, intentionally put someone in charge of the day, you know, of what we're doing every day, you know, Shelby Grad. And so, you know, some of the structure we organize, we have an LA Times Studios that's supposed to be a place where we can take our work out beyond what we publish on our site and do. We have a short doc series, and we're trying to develop some of our journalism into scripted and unscripted work. But we had to try to organize and structure it so that we could be successful there. And we brought audio and video and what we do in studios together under a structure. And we, you know, we added some new beats, you know, tried some new, you know, new kinds of areas of coverage. Have a big project on mental health this year. We're adding and, you know, growing, spreading, diversifying our investigative ranks. We, you know, want to raise our ambition. That's a big driving priority of mine, to just up our ambition. I think we have a big newsroom. It's 550. It's not as big as the Washington Post or the New York Times, but we have enough to do any level of journalism. And I think we have to raise that level of ambition and do more work that is remembered for, you know, decades to come, you know, that level of work. And I think in every area we can improve and get better. We've, you know, another big priority was certainly we want to, you know, continue to make progress with diversity, equity, and inclusion, and really taking particularly in our management ranks. We've been very intentional about that and really widening it and adding more, and not confined to Latino journalists, but given the size of Latino population here in California, mm-hmm, and then in LA, half of the population, roughly close to half in LA and LA County. So really being active there, you know, certainly have the first Latino born and raised here in East LA, Hector Becerra, taking over the California staff, which is our largest staff, first Latina sports editor here, only one in the country at a major place, Ileana Romero. And so we've made some strides, head of audio, Latino. We've, you know, new managing editor, Shawnee Hilton, African-American, you know, so really diversifying ranks and adding to them. And then really trying to build a culture of a lot more of an open newsroom where there's more collaboration across department lines so that we can maximize the strength we have and really try to become the modern media company that we we say we are.
I got you. A couple of more questions, Kevin. How has or how will digital play a part in the refurbishing of the Los Angeles Times?
Well, digital's everything, right? Because that's where the consumption is. I think we're all in a digital world now. You know, I don't care if you are technically a newspaper, a magazine, or a cable network. We're all digital because that's how people are consuming. And so, for us, I think it's doing more of the kind of work to reach digital audiences, trying to really constantly evaluate the user experience, how people are coming to our work, how can we reach them, more analytics and data to show what, when we do things well, why they work, and when we don't do things well, why don't they work, and being more rigorous about studying our strengths and weaknesses and where we can get better. So I think, you know, making our work essential and broadening that work. So, you know, the things that are guides to what to do here, you know, list of where to go, where to eat, where to hike, you know, where the wildfire tracker, coronavirus tracker, you know, giving people things that are essential to for them to be able to enjoy their lives here and to know what's going on. So we've leaned into more of that, more utility journalism, and also just more experimentation, and to try to do that experimentation as effortlessly as possible, to try things so that we can see if they work. And if they do, let's do more of it. And if they don't, let's try something else. You know, we recently had a project called Behold launch, and you know, it launched on an Instagram platform, but we also had a live event, which is basically Black portraiture, where we were taking, you know, photos of a range of African Americans and showcasing them and highlighting them, and just and being able to let them see, not only let the world see, but let them see the imagery of themselves. And sometimes I think we can underestimate how powerful just visibility is, you know, to be seen, to be photographed, to be thought of as this is what I look like. This is what I stand for. This is me. This is how I express myself. And, you know, I start with staffers, you know, they put all this together, you know, if the reporter had suggested it and other people picked up the ball, you know, Tiger for Jason Armand, you know, leaned into it and others did. And so there's just, you know, I think in a newsroom, you want to create energy, you know, that where people feel it. And then, man, here somebody did something that was cool. What can we do? You know, a happy newsroom for me is where people are constantly pitching new things. Right. And constantly thinking, how can I make the place better? Because when you have that, then that's people claiming the place as theirs. Because it's just, as much as I enjoy being executive editor, it's not my Los Angeles Times, you know? It's the Los Angeles Times. And so everybody can attach their name to it and their vibe to it, you know? We created Image Magazine, you know? We remade it ineffectively and trying to turn it into around-the-clock brands. It's a culture brand, and we do a lot of cool things that you don't see anywhere else but there. And we want to keep building that, you know, like, let's try new things and then get them to the audiences that need to see them, that want to see them. And hopefully people can feel great about their place. Not great every single day. You know how it is, John. We have some days, but feel great about where they work and what they're contributing back, what they're giving back to those who need to have a really strong Los Angeles Times.
Final question, Kevin. You recently attended the NABJ and NAHJ National Convention. What knowledge did you drop on this next generation of journalists?
You know, it's funny you say that. You and I have been around a while. I mean, the main thing is, I think to have some fun, and also just don't be in such a hurry. You know, one of the things I said was, man, ambition is great. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with having it, but don't let ambition ruin you. You know, enjoy it along the way and learn as much and be curious. That's a famous line in Ted Lasso, which I love that series. Be curious, not judgmental. Right. And they're really along the way. Don't step over people to try to get to a rung of the ladder and, you know, accumulate a lot of titles. And then you figure out, yeah, I had a lot of titles, but what did I do with those titles? You know, but really learn the craft. Late Kobe Bryant, you know, go to places, go into the gym, find a gym wherever he was on an away game and work on some deficiency in your game or something you want to improve. And man, because excellence along the way is you can be excellent in something, then you have a great pathway, you know. But sometimes it takes a while to develop that excellence, you know. And
right.
And so don't be always skipping. Don't skip steps, you know. Don't be in such a hurry that you don't learn. Take time to learn what you need to do so that you're better prepared along the way. And always at every stage have some fun, and not only in our business have fun, but outside it, you know, because the more well-rounded you are, the more that you get things feeding your soul and your mind, the better journalist you're going to be anyway. So
you got that right.
Yeah.
Any final comments, Kevin?
Man, the final comment is that when I got the note that you wanted to talk to me, man, first of all, I was honored. And that's an automatic yes, man, for you, because it's been a while, man. I hope we get to see each other, man. I've always been an admirer of your work, you know, and everything that you've done, you know, and the way you carried yourself and your career, man. And you know, it's an honor to be on the show with you. That's my final comment. I mean, your listeners, you know.
RCT, Pittsburgh.